So today is the 18th of November, Sunday morning. Oh, you got one of those Bibles. Let me get one too. And I've been teaching a series of teachings regarding how God teaches us individually and personally how to walk with Him. And the key verse for all of this is in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. And I'd like to go there one more time and look at that again. To be taught of God is a great privilege that we have and that we can enjoy.
What page was it?
It's page 1664, 1 Thessalonians 4:9, and it says, "But as touching brotherly love, ye need not that I write unto you, for ye yourselves are taught of God to love one another." This is written to fairly young believers in Thessalonica that Paul had witnessed to there. And he told them that they themselves were taught of God to love one another. And to love one another includes a lot of things. It's not just to have affection, but it's what we do for each other. It involves the manifestation of the Spirit, because it says the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Spirit that's given unto us. And to manifest the Spirit is always to be done with love, right?
Otherwise it's nothing.
Right, otherwise it's of no profit. So to be taught of God to love one another is really a big statement that includes many, many things. And we've been looking at different examples in the Bible of how God taught certain people to walk with Him. How He taught a young boy named Samuel how to receive revelation and become a prophet. How He taught Jeremiah, who was a young man when God called him to be a prophet, and how He taught him. We looked at the Apostle Paul, how he was really an enemy of the Christian church, thought he was doing what was right, and how God interceded with him by having His Son Jesus Christ appear unto him and teach him what he would need to do, and how he learned to receive revelation. He learned to manifest the Spirit. And this morning I'd like to look at Moses in Exodus chapter 3. There's much in the Bible written about Moses, so we're not going to cover his whole life. If you wanted to, you could start in Exodus chapter 1 and read chapters 1 and 2 and read about Moses, and you can read the rest of the Bible to see all that he did. But he was called by God to be a prophet at a time where there were no scriptures to go by. So he was the first one to write the scriptures down that we know of, right? So he would have had the history of things that he was taught perhaps by his parents when he was very little, because remember he was born at a time when the king of Egypt had commanded all the Hebrew families to kill their sons. If they had a son, they could keep the daughters alive, but they were supposed to kill their sons when they were babies, and they wouldn't do it. It said by faith they hid him for 3 months. And then Moses' mother made a little basket out of reeds and waterproofed it and sent him floating down the Nile River. And so Pharaoh's daughter found the baby and decided to adopt it. But she let Moses' actual mother nurse him and until he was weaned and able to go on his own. By that time, he would have learned to talk, and she could have taught him all about God and about his family background and instructed him before he was raised in the Egyptian household, as in as part of the royal family. But he was there as an Egyptian for 40 years, and then he defended a Hebrew that was being attacked by an Egyptian and killed the Egyptian and took off and was in the land of Midian for 40 years. So that's like another lifetime for him. 40 years, that's a long time to be away. And in chapter 3 it says, now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. Now, Midian was one of the sons of Abraham by his second wife, Keturah.
Where are we at?
We're in page 86, Exodus 3, verse 1. So Moses, you know, when he left Egypt, he defended a group of girls that had sheep from these other shepherds, and there were seven daughters of this man named Reuel was Jethro's other name, and Reuel means friend of God. So he's a descendant of Abraham and apparently knew who God was, and being a priest of Midian, he would have worshipped God. He might have recognized other gods also, but later on, after they cross the Red Sea and they're in the wilderness, Jethro comes out to meet Moses and is thrilled to hear what God had done for him, and said that, I can see that God is greater than all other gods, and he sacrificed to him. So he was a man who did have respect for the true God. He was a priest. He was, and that could have been one that who did sacrifices, but also a chief leader of the family. So Moses stayed with him, married one of his daughters, and he helped him out by taking care of the sheep. So he was kept the flock. Middle of the verse says, he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb, where later the Ten Commandments would be given. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. Now, is this something that God did all the time? Only one time that I have ever read about that God made a bush burn without being burnt up. So God often does things that first and only time. But it got his attention. And I think that was the point. Because verse 4 says, when the Lord, that's Jehovah, Lord in all capital letters is Jehovah or Yehovah. I think it would be pronounced in the Hebrew. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. Now that might have been the angel's voice, because it says the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the bush to get his attention. Verse 5, and he said, draw not nigh hither. Don't come too close, but put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. This is the first time he really had contact with God, or even an angel of God talking to him. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land into a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. all good news up to this point, right? Now, therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So everything sounded great until it's like I'm sending you, me. I'm an 80-year-old guy that takes care of sheep. I murdered an Egyptian, and since then I've been in exile. Why are you sending me? Verse 11, and Moses said unto God, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? What are you picking on me for? Love to see him delivered and all, but golly, you know me? And he said, certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. Now, when Moses talked to Abraham, he just had to tell him once, and Abraham did it, right? God said, look, Abraham, I'm going to bless you. I want you to leave Ur of the Chaldees and just go wherever I tell you. And Abraham said, okay. He packed up, started going. He said, here we are, where we go next? Told him to circumcise himself and every male in his hand. Oh, did it that day. Told him to sacrifice his son Isaac. Got up early the next morning. Now Moses here said, wait a minute. I don't think I like this job. But God gave him assurances. And then in verse 13, Moses said unto God, behold, look, when I come unto the children of Israel and shall say unto them, the God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, and they shall say unto me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And the word I am is the word ha-yah. We're familiar with that word from Genesis chapter 1. The earth became without form and void. Also when God said, let there be or become light, and there was light. That's the word ha-yah. So God said unto Moses, I am that I am, or I become what I become. And he said, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am, or I become, ha-yah, hath sent me unto you. The name Jehovah, or Jehovah, is a derivative of the word ha-yah. And it means, I will be what I will be. And God said moreover unto Moses, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, Jehovah, God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations. Go, and gather the elders of Israel together, and say unto them, the Lord Jehovah, God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, appeared unto me, saying, I have surely visited you and seen that which is done to you in Egypt. And I have said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt unto the land of the Canaanites, on page 88 now, and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, and they shall hearken to thy voice. They shall. And thou shalt come, thou and the elders of Israel, unto the king of Egypt. And ye shall say unto him, the Lord Jehovah, God of the Hebrews, hath met with us. And now let us go, we beseech thee, 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. And I am sure, or I know, that the king of Egypt will not let you go, not by a mighty hand. And I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in the midst thereof. And after that, he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And it shall come to pass that when ye go, ye shall not go empty. But every woman shall borrow of her neighbor and of her that sojourneth in her house, jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment, and ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and ye shall spoil the Egyptians. Now, go get them, tiger. In chapter 4, verse 1, Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me. Now, God had said in verse 18 of chapter 3, they shall hearken to thy voice, right? Mm-hmm. So Moses saying, you know, wait a minute. Yeah. They will not believe me, nor hearken to my voice. Now, he's kind of, he's not believing what God is telling him, is he?
No, he isn't.
They will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. Now, what's Moses going on? What's the last contact he had with the Hebrew people? He had killed an Egyptian to defend one of the Hebrews, right? And then the next day, he said he saw two Hebrew men fighting with each other. And he said, look, you're brothers. You shouldn't be doing that. And the one said, are you going to kill me like you killed that Egyptian yesterday? And he said, uh-oh. They know about this. It's going to get to Pharaoh's ears. I better get out of here. And so his intentions towards the Hebrew people were good. He was one of them. But their reaction to him, at least at that incident, was not a favorable one. And I'm sure that stuck in his head. But God had just told him, they shall hearken to thy voice. He said, Pharaoh won't let you go until I do all my wonders. And everything God said in those last six verses of chapter 3, they all came to pass, didn't they? It's like just a brief summary of everything that's going to unfold in the next 10 chapters or so. But Moses answered and said, behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. So, verse 2, what does God do? He didn't choose anybody else to do the job. Because he had already said, you're going to be the one. The Lord said unto him, what is that in thine hand? And he said, a rod, because he was holding a staff. You know, a big stick. He was a shepherd. That was part of the shepherd's equipment. And he said, cast it on the ground. Did he tell him what was going to happen when he cast it on the ground? He just said, throw your stick down. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it, because it was an actual serpent with teeth and
venom.
Yeah. And he fled from it because he was familiar with serpents, and he probably knew the harmless ones from the poisonous ones. And if he fled from it, it would have been one of the poisonous ones, right? But the stick became an actual serpent. How did that happen? God made it happen. Now, how did Moses do that miracle? Very simple. He just
did what he was told.
That's it. That is the key to doing miracles. God tells you to do something, you do what he says when he says to do it. I bet he had thrown that stick down many other times. It had never turned into a snake before. And I'm sure there were many other times afterwards he'd put the stick down and it didn't turn into a snake. But when God said to do it, because God would cause it to come to pass, all Moses had to do was throw the stick on the ground. That's the whole key to miracles. So he threw his stick down. It became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it. And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. It's usually not the end that you pick up a snake.
No.
Just flip around and bite you in the other end.
I've never picked up a snake. I'm not a fan of snakes. They're interesting to me. I've taken pictures of them in the wild. I've never reached forth my hand to grab them. But I've seen it done. And usually they take like a stick with a fork at the end and hold the head and then grab it right behind the head so it can't turn around and bite you. If you take it by the tail, it has plenty of opportunity
I screamed and ran as fast as I could, which isn't very fast, but screamed and ran.
I was worse than snakes, midget clown snakes.
But anyway, God told him to take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. It was no longer a snake. It was an actual piece of wood at this point. Verse 5, and he just says, that they may believe. He was just continuing a sentence from cast thy, you know, rod on the ground. That they may believe that the Lord, Jehovah, God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath appeared unto thee. So, you got this. You'll be doing this again, and they will believe you. And he said further, more unto him, put now thine hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, you know, like Napoleon. When he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. So I've never seen a leper up close, but from what I understand, their skin turns white when it has leprosy. And he said, put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into his bosom again, and he plucked it out of his bosom, and behold, it was turned again as his other flesh. Now, usually, if someone has leprosy, it takes a period of time for it to go from a little spot to spread throughout all the skin and turn white. That happened in a second. And then it turned back again in a second. And it was actual leprosy. And I'm sure that it nothing to do with Moses' hand, that every other time it's good and every other time it's leprous. But if he did what God said to do, when he said to do it, then God would cause these things to come to pass. Verse 8, and it shall come to pass, God is saying to Moses now, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign, if you still have any doubts. Verse 9, and it shall come to pass, if they will not believe also these two signs, if you're still questioning, neither hearken unto thy voice, that thou shalt take of the water of the river and pour it upon the dry land, and the water which thou takest out of the river shall become blood upon the dry land. It will become blood. It will not just turn red. It will become blood, like out of the veins of a living thing. How does God do these things? I don't know. He doesn't explain the how, except that he makes it come to pass when someone does what he says to do when he says to do it. And Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. Now there's a verse in Acts 7 where Stephen is telling the story of Israel, and he talks about Moses, saying that he was mighty in words and deeds when he was in Egypt as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. But here Moses says, I am of a slow speech and of a slow tongue. So I don't know if something happened in the last 40 years where he is a shepherd taking care of sheep. Naturally, he would talk with his wife and with his father and with other people. But at this point, he considers himself of a slow mouth and of a slow tongue. Also, he would be going to Pharaoh and having to speak in Egyptian, and maybe he was a little rusty in his Egyptian over the past 40 years, not talking to anybody from Egypt. But for whatever reason, he was of a slow speech and of a slow tongue, at least in his own opinion. And the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb, or the deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Meaning, I can make you eloquent if I want to.
I just turned the wood to a snake. Come on.
In verse 12 says, now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth and teach thee what thou shalt say. You won't even have to think of the words. I will teach it to you. And that word teach means he'll direct him very pointedly exactly what to do. And he said, O my Lord, I pray thee, by the hand of him thou wilt send. In other words, please send somebody else who's better qualified to do this than I am. Verse 14, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. This is so frustrating. And he said, is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well. And also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee. And when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him, and put words in his mouth, and I will be with thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you, both of you, what ye shall do. And he shall be thy spokesman unto the people, and he shall be with thee, even he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and thou shalt be to him instead of God. So, answer that objection. Your older brother, Aaron, was 3 years older than Moses was. There's a verse that says that Aaron was 83 and Moses was 80 when they appeared before Pharaoh. So he gets his older brother. I would love it if my older brother believed God and would do things with me like that. I would just love it to have my older brother, you know, just be with me and, you know, what a team they must have been. And that settled it for Moses. Oh, my older brother? I'll do it then. Verse 17, and thou shalt take this rod in thine hand, wherewith thou shalt do signs. And Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said unto him, let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive. And Jethro said to Moses, go in peace. Shalom. Means you're not only going to be peaceful, but you're going to prosper. It's going to go well. And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, go return into Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life. That could have been another concern of his. You know, I'm in exile. I committed murder there. But he said, they're all dead that sought your life. It's time. And Moses took his wife and his sons and set them upon an ass, and he returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of God in his hand. And the Lord said unto Moses, when thou goest to return into Egypt, see that thou do all those wonders before Pharaoh, which I have put in thine hand. But I will harden his heart, that he shall not let the people go. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. And I say unto thee, let my son go, that he may serve me. But if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn. That's happened at the Passover. Right? Now the next verse is a little difficult one for a lot of people. Because it says, and it came to pass by the way in the inn that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. And that verse has been in there all along. And he's saying, God sent him there, and now he's on his way, and it says the Lord met him and sought to kill him. But there's a little more to it, and the next verse will explain what's going on. It says, then Zipporah, that's Moses' wife, daughter of Jethro, Zipporah took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin of her son and cast it at his feet and said, surely a bloody husband thou art to me. So he let him go. Then she said, a bloody husband thou art because of the circumcision. It was absolutely necessary for Moses. Circumcision was part of the covenant God made with Abraham. Had everything to do with the inheritance and entering the promised land and God keeping his promises, Moses had to do that. He had to have his sons circumcised. So far, he hadn't done it. And that was a necessary thing. Verse 26, he let him go. Then she said, "A bloody husband thou art because of the circumcision." And the Lord said to Aaron, "Go into the wilderness to meet Moses." And he went and met him in the Mount of God and kissed him. So Moses talked to Aaron, told him to meet Moses, and told him exactly where to meet him. Because he says, he's in the wilderness. Well, that's a big place. But he told him exactly where to meet him. And Moses told Aaron all the words of the Lord who had sent him and all the signs which he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. So if God told Moses, tell Aaron to throw the stick on the ground, when Aaron did it, it turned into a snake. And when he picked it up by the tail, it turned back into a stick. You know? And the hand and the leprosy and the water and the blood. Verse 31, and the people believed, like God said, like Moses said they wouldn't believe, but God said, yeah, they will. The people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. So there's a lot of other stuff that happens after that, but it shows how God taught Moses. Moses was honest enough with God to say, look, I don't like what you're telling me to do. You know, Jeremiah was the same way. I can't do this. I can't be a prophet. I'm just a little guy. You know, Paul had his, and there's Ananias who had to go minister to Paul. He didn't like the job he had to do. But he talked to the one who told him to do it. And God answered everything standing in the way. God, and in doing so, he trained him how to receive revelation. I'm talking to you now. Do this. Stick turns into a snake. Taught him how to do miracles, how simple it would be. Just do what I tell you when I tell you to do it, and in the way that I tell you to do it. When you pick up that stick, pick it up by the tail, not by the head, right? Everything God tells them is important, yet to follow the instructions. That is the whole key to miracles. First, learning how to listen to God, and then doing the things that God tells you to do. God will do the same for us. Not only that, now we have this written down. Everything Moses went through, he didn't have any scriptures to go by. But all this was written out. We can read this today. We can see how God trained him. We can see how God trained Samuel. We can see how God trained Jeremiah, Paul, all the others. And we can see that God will train us in our own individual way, because he did it differently with everyone, right? No two are the same way. God is personal and individual. He'll teach you in a way that you can understand, that will help you. And he'll teach you how to do it in a way that you will be able to get it. The only thing is to be receptive to God. When he calls your name, answer. So many of the miracles that were done were not things that people thought of that they asked God to do. Some of them were. Gideon with his fleece and all that stuff. But most of them, parting the Red Sea, so many things that God did, were God's idea, and the person who was on earth carrying it out only did it because God told them to do it. And they were just following instructions, and God brought it to pass. But God will teach us just like he taught Moses if we want to learn. So thank you, dear God, for how great you are. Thank you for how kind you are, how patient you are, how understanding you are. And we ask that you teach us. You have taught us so many things through the years. Each one of us individually, we ask that you continue to teach us, because it doesn't matter if we're 5 or 6 years old or we're 80 years old, that we can learn from you and know that the great God who created the heaven and earth will individually teach us personally how to walk with you and ultimately how to love one another. And we thank you in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.